All right, Tabo, say good morning. Our shiur this morning is dedicated by Chaim and Jackie Nachman in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Jackie's mother, Del Meyerhoff, Drezel Nochama, Bas Chaim Edel. We hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, Nesham will have an aliyah and her family in Nochama. So we'll say, so today's daf is Samech Tes. We are picking up on the bottom of Samech Ches Amud Beis 68b, and we're going to pick up Emir Tashem B'nei Rav Ilish. So it's 2, 4, 5 lines up from the bottom. I want to thank Yehuda for giving the shir yesterday, and I also want to give all of you an incredible Yashar Koach. Ezehu Neshach is not an easy parak, as you may have noticed already, but it's an incredible chizuk, Baruch Hashem, to see everybody keep plugging away, keep trying, and Emir Tashem, you know, 95% of Talmud Torah is Siyata Dishmaya. So whatever effort you put in, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees B'dar Shadam Rose Leilech Molich and also HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that you want to understand Ezehu Neshach, he's going to help us understand Ezehu Neshach. So says the Gemara, B'nei Rav Ilish, Nafek Alay. Alright, so just one word of background, just for a moment. So remember again, yesterday, So we began the sugya of Iska. So just to frame some of these, we're dealing with complicated concepts that have many different complicated applications. We're going to try to simplify things as much as possible and just focus on some basic core principles. So remember again, the Gemara introduced to us yesterday the concept of Iska. The concept of Iska in a very simple case is I give Reuven money and I tell Reuven to engage in a business venture, and essentially we go ahead and we agree to split the profits and the losses half and half. Half and half. So on a technical level, again, there shouldn't be Iska, it shouldn't be Ribis, except for the fact that I am technically getting a service above and beyond my investment. What's the service that I'm getting above and beyond my investment? That Reuven is managing my half. Not only is Reuven managing his own half of the funds, but he's also managing my half of the funds. And therefore, in the event that there are gains, I am getting a service above and beyond my investment. So that's called Ribis. It's called Ribis. There's a very easy way to manage this Ribis issue. What's the easy way to manage the Ribis issue? I'm going to make Yehuda give the daf again. Yes, right? So the very simple way to manage the issue is to pay a fee. To pay a fee. What we call a management fee. I give Reuven an extra additional fee for managing my money. This way, because he is now providing a service for a fee, therefore we avoid any type of Ribis issue. So I'm going to say that's, again, I'm not getting into all of the pratim, but that bigadol is the concept we're dealing with over here. Now with that, B'nei Rav Ilish, Nefek Alayhu Shtar, Dava Kasepe Paga Bagar, Paga Bapsit. So I'll say, so what happened? Rav Ilish died, and his children inherited a document from him that had in it written Pagabahafsid, that Rav Ilish apparently had entered into an agreement with someone where they agreed to go ahead and split the profits, split the losses, what we call an Iska situation. Amar Rav, so we'll say, here's the problem. The document made no provision for any type of management fee. So because of that, again, it looked like a shtar sheyesh bo ribis. So Amar Rav, Rav says, Rav Ilish gavra rabuhu, v'isura le'inish lahavasafi. Rav Ilish was a great man, and therefore, there's no way that he would have entered into an illegal transaction. So we'll say, but just by the way, you should understand what a beautiful musr there is in this statement. You know, sometimes you have to look at when you see someone and they do something, the mechanism for being dan l'kaf sechus is every single Jew is kodesh. Every single Jew is holy. Every single Jew is beautiful. Every single Jew is wonderful. So the first reaction when I see someone do something is, it couldn't have been that they did something wrong. They're a great person. So therefore, I have to try to understand their actions. So Rav Ilish is a great person. It's impossible that he lent beribis. I have to try to understand what happened over here. So the Gemara says, he says, Gav Rabu, v'isur l'inish l'avasafi, manavshach. So here are the possibilities. E palga ba'agar, trey tilsi behefsin. It could very well be that if the document lays out that there was an agreement to go ahead and split the gains equally, trey tilsi behefsin, that the balamos, the owner of the money, agreed to accept upon himself 2/3 of the loss. So most remember again, when we have this concept of iska problems, iska is only a problem when there is a direct division. But however, again, if the owner of the money chooses to accept the greater loss upon himself, that also avoids any type of ribis situation. E top of samichtes, e palga behefsid, treitil si ba'agar. The other possibility is, if they agreed to go ahead and split the losses, maybe the balamos, the owner of the money, agreed to give the person who was managing the money 2/3 of the schar. Look at Rashi, 2/3 of the gains. So also what they're trying to understand over here is they're trying to understand the Lashon of the Shtar. As much as Lashon of the Shtar said, half schar and half gains and half losses for each, perhaps there are different ways to interpret that. Perhaps what it means is if the person who is managing the money gets half of the schar, then perhaps what that means is that the owner of the money agrees to absorb upon himself 2/3 of the loss. And if it turns out that at the end of the day, both are going to maintain half of the loss, maybe the person who is managing the money gets 2/3 of the gains. Amar Rav Kana, Amris L'Shmaita Kameid Rav Zvid Min Arda. So I said this over in front of Rav Zvid of Narda. Amar Li Dum Rav Ilish Tov El Ima B'Tzir Hava. Oh, Rabbi said, listen to this. Remember again yesterday we saw the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said that you could take care of a management fee very easily. How? Well, say if I'm the one who's giving the money to Reuven, so let's say we did not go ahead and negotiate an additional management fee. So how do I go ahead and take care of the Ribbis issue? That when I invite Reuven over for a Suda, I let Reuven dip his challah in my fish brine. Who doesn't want a little bit of fish brine with the challah, right? So I let him dip. So what does that mean? There's an extra additional benefit that he is receiving. That additional benefit is called the management fee. It's not stipulated, it's not spelled out in the document, but it is a benefit that he gets. So says the Gemara, so we'll say, so comes along Rav Zavid, and Rav Zavid said, why do you have to try to reinterpret the wording of the Shtar? I can tell you something interesting, something simpler. Maybe Rav Ilish allowed the person who was managing the money to dip his chal into Rav Ilish's fish brine. Rav Nachman said, Halacha k'Rav Yehuda. Rav Nachman said, remember these are the lines right before when we started. Rav Nachman said, the halacha follows Rav Yehuda. And again, halacha l'maisa, even if there is not a stipulated management fee, if the owner of the money gives the person managing the money some type of benefit, that could count as a management fee. Amar Lesi said to him, one second, lav hilchasa itmar, ela shita itmar. This is very important. Rav Nachman did not say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Nachman was just clarifying the shita of Rabbi Yehuda and saying that others hold like Rabbi Yehuda as well. So the Gemara says, but it seems to be clear, because if you want to say, this is actually interesting, that even though, see, remember, Rav Nachman said, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, halacha k'Rabbi Yosi. Right? So and then again, halacha k'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says, Gemara's suggesting over here that when he says halacha, he doesn't literally mean that the halacha follows. Rather, he's trying to go ahead and say there's a school of thought that follows this approach. And these are all of the opinions that fall into that school of thought. So the Gemara says it must be that way, because if you don't say it, lamali lamechshav ulameimar halacha halacha, leima halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, to make a mikulu. Because it will say, if Rav Nachman was just coming along and stating halacha, then all he needed to say was that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda. Because it will say, out of all of the opinions mentioned, Rabbi Yehuda was the most mekel. When we say mekel, what that means is he was the one who kind of allowed for even the most basic benefit to count as the management fee. So if you would have just said the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda, I would have automatically understood the halacha follows all of these other opinions as well. The fact that Rav Nachman felt the need to say the halacha is like this one, like this one, like this one, like this one, Rav Nachman is not coming to state halacha, rather he's coming to kind of create a framework for us that there's a certain school of thought that says that even if you do not arrange an explicit management fee, as long as the person managing the money gets some type of additional benefit, and it may be very small benefit, like getting to use your fish brine, that is going to be enough in order to avoid a ribbis situation. Amarav, so we'll say, so therefore again, it turns, so fine. So we're still not clear exactly how to understand Rav Ilish's arrangement. There are a couple of different ways we can understand how he arranged it, but bottom line is we're confident that he did not allow for a ribbis arrangement. Amarav, so we'll say, here we go. Amarav. So listen to this next case. Let's say, look at Rashi. Rashi says, Hashem egal amechza b'schar behefzis. We'll say, I give a calf to Reuven, and I say to Reuven, listen, here's the deal. We will split the profits and the loss. V'omer lo, mashiyavi yoster al shlish damav shel achshav tol b'scharcha. And I say to him, whatever the animal appreciates, more than a third above its current value, that is going to be your management fee. All right? So I'm giving him the calf to watch. We agreed to split all profits on us, and I tell him, if the calf appreciates, anything above one-third appreciation of current value is your management fee. So we'll say, so what's the chap in this case? What's the chap over here? There's a management fee, but what? It's not guaranteed. Right, it's not guaranteed. So meaning, if there's appreciation, so remember again, there are multiple scenarios. So scenario one is there's depreciation. Scenario two is there's appreciation, but it's less than a third. And scenario three is that there's appreciation above a third. Those are the three different scenarios. Only one of those ultimately yields a management fee. So the shaila is this a proper setup or not? So Rav, Amar Rav, Mosar, Bishlish, Bistachari, Zimutar, Rav says it's okay. This is fine. As long as there's the possibility for a management fee, this is absolutely okay. No ribis. Shmuel Amar Shmuel says, So Shmuel says, I don't understand. What does this mean? In the event that the calf does not appreciate above, more than a third above its present value, so what? The person managing the calf is going to go home empty-handed, which is another way of Shmuel saying, the only way it works to stipulate a management fee is what Rabbi Osai, if it's a defined amount. Elo Amar Shmuel, listen to this. Kotzeitz lo dinar. So Shmuel says, listen, if you want to do this one-third management fee, or this one-third appreciation management fee, you can do that, but you have to stipulate at least some basic guaranteed amount as a management fee. In other words, you could call it a dinar, which is a relatively small amount of money. You could call it a dinar, so all you have to do is guarantee him a dinar plus one-third appreciation above current value. That's fine. But according to Shmuel, in order for a management fee to be a valid management fee, and in order to be able to avoid any type of ribis situation, you need to guarantee him something. So we infer from this that Rav holds that you don't have to guarantee him even a dinar. But is that true? Va'amarav, resh egla lipituma. So we'll say, listen to this. If you go ahead and you give an animal, there used to be people who were just shepherds, but their job was like to fatten up animals. So I would give my animal struggling with his weight. So I go ahead, I give my animal right to this guy, and it's his job to fatten up the animal. That's his job. So the halacha was that, so remember, this could be a chatzi l'schar, chatzi l'hefsid. Right? So remember, you would split the profits and losses equally. So what happens? When you shecht that animal, you divide it up, it was understood that the head of the animal goes to the fattener. I don't know if that's the right lashon for it. You understand what I mean? The fattener. Right? The guy whose job it is in charge to fatten the animal. So the Gemara says, my love, the amrle moser shlish bischarcha. Is this not talking about Nabosei? Now here's the interesting part. In addition to whatever gains he's going to get, the fattener is going to get, he's also going to get the head. So says the Gemara, is this not, this must be a case of where the management fee was structured as the following. If the animal appreciates above one-third, above its current value right now, that money above the third, that's your management fee. And in addition to that, you always gave the fattener the head. Why did you always give the fattener the head? Why? A fixed fee. Because this way, he was guaranteed something. So you see that even Rav says, you get the head. So says the Gemara. Lo, that's not the case. The arrangement was normally the following. What you would tell the fattener is, listen, here is the deal. Here's the deal. Right? The deal is, you could either go ahead and I will give you any appreciation of the animal above one-third of its current value, or I'll give you the head. So we'll say, so then it was up to the fattener to go ahead and make that decision based on what did he want. Was he willing to take the roll of the dice and ultimately take the one-third above appreciation, or would he take the head? But you would not get both. Ibai saying, the other possibility is, ki kamarav moser shlish bischarcha mutter. So we'll say, furthermore, now we're going to qualify Rav's statement. When did Rav say that to guarantee the manager of the money, or the manager of the cow, one-third, above one-third of the appreciation of current value as his management fee, when is that appropriate? Kegon de islay behema lididei. Oh, they both say this type of arrangement only works in a particular situation. For example, let's say the person who's managing my calf also has his own animals. He has his own calf. And therefore what? He's already managing his own cattle, his own calf. So because of that, again, the Amri Inshi Gavilatura, as people say, as the common expression goes, we've all used it multiple times, right? Once you're needing for one calf, need for two calves. It sounds much better in Aramaic, but you understand, right? The idea being that Lamaisa, again, once you're already taking care of your animal, it's not this, meaning there's not that much more effort involved in taking care of a second animal. So in a situation like that, where the tircha of the person who's managing the calf is relatively minimal, that's when Rav will say, you could structure this type of management fee that says, if the animal appreciates above a third, and we'll see, you understand, a third is just some made-up number, meaning it doesn't matter what the number is. The point over here is that this is not a guaranteed management fee. That's the point. So Rav will say the only time a management fee like this works is when the tircha of the person watching the calf is relatively minimal. But if there's a significant amount of tircha, then there must be a guaranteed management fee. Rebbe Lozer Mehal Granya, Zabin Nehema. Let's listen to this. So Lozer from Agranya, he bought an animal, V'yoyevle la'arisei. So we'll say, so what happened? He gave it to Arise, you know, literally means a sharecropper. But in this case, again, what's happening over here is he's going ahead and he's giving the animal to this individual. Rashi says, V'yoyevle la'arisei, l'mechza b'schar b'hefzid. So we'll say this is an iska situation. So Rabbi Lazar is giving over this animal to the person who's going to be in charge of raising it, fattening up, whatever it is, and they agree to split profits and losses. So remember, Ginebose, how do we start the shir today? That arrangement is inherently problematic, als ribis. Because even though, again, the shepherd over here, we'll call him the shepherd, is watching the animal for Rabbi Lazar, half of it is his, half of it is Rabbi Lazar's, he is managing Rabbi Lazar's part. Therefore, again, Rabbi Lazar, technically speaking, is getting an additional service for the money that he gave the shepherd. He's getting a management. He's getting management services. The only way to circumvent, not to circumvent, but the only way to avoid or to remedy that ribbis issue is to give a management fee. So now what happens? So how did Rabbi Lazar deal with this? He gave the head of the animal to the sharecropper, to the shepherd, I should say, to the shepherd as his fee. V'yoyev, so as they're splitting up the animal, what happens? So this is actually a good deal. So meaning the shepherd gets, first of all, half of the animal, half of the profits, plus the head. So meaning they lop off the head, literally, right? Literally, that belongs to the sharecropper. Then the rest of the animal, ultimately, again, is split between the two of them. So let's listen to this. Amrili divisu. So you can imagine, right? The sharecropper comes home. I keep calling him sharecropper. The shepherd comes home. Tells his wife, right, Baruch Hashem, I told you Hashem Kitov, we got good parnasa. So his wife says, I'm going to do this. You know, I don't want to rain on your parade, but nami alisa. So listen to this. His wife says, listen, I know you think you did well, but had you been a real partner with him, in other words, had you partnered in an animal 50-50, which means had you contributed 50% of the funds, you would have also gotten 50% of the tail. So apparently, again, the tail is not included in the division of the animal. And the tail actually has a lot of value because the tail has a lot of fat in it. So those fats, as much as they're prohibited from consumption, ultimately are usable for a whole variety of other things. So his wife says, listen, I'm not saying you didn't do good. You did great. But, right, but had you actually been a 50%, what's the word, capital partner? Is that the right term? Yeah. So thank you, right? Had you been a 50% capital partner, right? So we've all had conversations like this, let's be honest, right? It was a great job, but you know, maybe in the future you could do it like this, right? So had you invested the capital, you would have gotten a little bit more. So says the Gemara, so what happened? So the husband, he's a good husband, he listens. So Azul Zabin Bahadeh. So I'll say, so what happened? I'm sorry. Azul Zabin Bahadeh. Palagla Malisa. So what happens? So sure enough, they bought the animal b'shutfus. So the guy listened. They bought the animal b'shutfus and they split the tail. Amrle ta niflage l'resha. So now what happens? So now the shepherd, who's now the partner, the equity partner, who's now the equity partner, comes along and says, let's split up the head as well. Amrle, 1 second. Amrle hashta kidme kara nami lo. So 1 second. So now what happened? So they're dividing up the animal. So they say, let's divide up the head. So the shepherd turned equity partner says, 1 second, I get the head. Right? Because we'll say, remember, again, just understand what changed in this situation.
The shepherd became an equity partner. He contributed 50% to the funds, but he still provided, he was still the shepherd. So he was still watching over the animal. So now what happens? They're dividing up the animal, very exciting. I guess they start from the tail, they're working their way up, right? So they split up the tail, very excited, right? The body, very excited. They get to the head, and what's happening over? Rabbi Lazar goes ahead and splits the head. Shepherd says, 1 second. I get the head, because even though I'm an equity partner, I'm still the shepherd. I should get the head. So they switch Rabbi Lazar, 1 second. Amalei ad ha'idna, Zuzi didi havu. So 1 second, Rabbi Lazar says, understand, up until now, this is all my money. Ilo havi yahavne lecha tvei, parta mechse kiribis. See, here's the difference. Up until now, this is all my money. If I would not give you a management fee, right, which essentially is what the head was, then we'd run into a ribis problem. Hashta shutfi anon. Now we're partners. And as partners again, we split everything. So we'll say this is actually a fascinating din in partnerships. So I know shepherd, what are you going to tell me? Maika Amrit, Tarachna Tvei, Porta, you're going to tell me, but 1 second, this is not a partnership. We both contributed 50% of the funds, but I worked harder than you. So you're going to say because you worked harder than me, that therefore what, you're entitled to more money? Doesn't work that way. Omri inshi stam arisa lemari ara kamashabed lafshe la suye le raya. We'll say, for example, everyone knows that in a sharecropping arrangement, the sharecropper is always going to work a bit harder than the person who's investing the capital because it is his job to go ahead and seek out the filter. Well, in other words, what the Gemara is saying is the following. This is amazing. I'm taking complicated concepts and only giving you a sound bite of it. So don't go out and start dispensing psak halacha based on what you're in Daf Yomi Shir. Right? But again, we'll say in halacha in general, in a partnership, your entitlement to proceeds corresponds to the amount of your investment. So for example, if you have two guys who each invest 50% of the capital, but one of them works harder than the other, that harder work does not entitle you to more of the gains. Now granted, if you establish a partnership agreement that says we each invest 50% of the capital, but listen, you're going to be the guy in the office. You're going to be the guy in the field. You're going to be the guy shepherding. So you're going to get 75% of the gains. Absolutely. Whatever two people agree upon is absolutely fine. But in an unstipulated situation, your share in the gains corresponds to your amount of investment. So therefore, again, this is amazing halacha. So therefore, Rabbi Lazar is saying to the shepherd, I got it. You worked harder than me. But we are 50% equity partners. So because we're 50% equity partners, we share in the animal in its totality 50-50. Incredible idea. Tana, I will say again, these are much more complicated scenarios, but you understand. Tana Rabbanan, so let's go a little bit weiter. Hashem behema lechavero. So I say, listen to this. I go ahead and I give an animal to my friend. And again, he's going to raise the animal, watch the animal, 50-50. Chatzi schar vehefsid. So the Gemara says like this. Ad masai chayv letapabo. Now, I'm saying this is a very interesting question. So let's say I go ahead, I give an animal to Reuven. I say, Reuven, here's the deal. You're in charge of taking care of the animal. We're going to split profits and losses 50-50. Reuven wants to cash out, right? Reuven's done. He wants to retire to Boca Raton. He's done. So what happens? At what point in time can he force a sellout? Right? At what point in time could he force a division? And Masai Chayav L'Tapa. So what the Gemara is really asking over here is almost like, what is the minimum amount of time of this partnership? Honestly, both say, again, like in most things in halacha, most situations could be remedied by avoiding ambiguity. Right? Meaning you could stipulate, this is a partnership for X amount of time. We're talking about a case where there was no such stipulation. So at what point in time can one of the parties force a division of the animal? So says the Gemara, Sumcha Samar Ba'asono Shmon Asar Chodesh. So Sumcha says it depends. For donkeys, it's 18 months. Begodudos, Rashi says over, Godudos are behemadako, are small animals. Chavdal and Chodesh, 24 months. So again, these apparently are the amounts of time where you could see significant appreciation in these animals if they're taken care of, if they're well fed, so on and so on. Mimbo lachlok pesach zmano, and if one of the parties, and usually it's the shepherd, wants to go ahead and force a sale during that time, chavero ma'akev alov. So this is actually a very interesting halacha. So if I'm the guy who gave the cow to the shepherd, right, we're going to split proceeds, we're going to split profits and gains, profits and losses. Excuse me. And let's say, again, I gave him a donkey. So the minimum time for a donkey is going to be 18 months. 9 months in, the shepherd says, I have enough, I want to sell. I could prevent him from selling. I could prevent the sale. So says the Gemara, Aval inu dome tipulo shel shana zlu tipulo shel shana cheres. The Gemara uses a very cryptic lashon. However, the care of the animal this year is different than the care of the animal in the second year. Now, what this literally means is the reason that the shepherd can't get out of this early before these periods of time is because the care of the animal increases over time. So to get out of this arrangement at a time where the caring for the animal becomes more intense is going to place undue hardship upon the original owner of the animal. So the Gemara says, Aval my kamar. What does this mean? My, what does it say? Aval, but. So the Gemara says, No. But it means like this. Ela lefi she'ino dome tipulo shel shana zu letipuna shel shana acher. So we'll say what it means is, since the care of the animal this year is not the same as the animal care of the animal last. In other words, since the caring for the animal becomes more intense now, therefore the shepherd does not have a right to back out at this critical juncture. Tanya yidach. We'll say another brayso. Hashem mehim lechaver amasai chayv letapel bevlados. We'll say, listen to this. I go ahead. I give my friend an animal. And the animal gives birth. Look at Rashi, by the way, second wide line. So the animal gives birth. So remember again, there's also the same split of profits and losses by the offspring. Now, if I'm the shepherd, I don't want to care for little animals, right? It's too much of a tircho, right? So I don't want to care for it. So at what point in time can I force the sale or force the division of the smaller animals? So the Gemara says, bedaka lama yom, for smaller animals after 30 days, ubegasa nun yom, and for larger animals, 50 days. Rabbi Yossi says, no, bedaka gimel chadoshim. No, you have to leave a small animal with its mother for at least 3 months. Mipnei shetipula meruba. Why? Because again, there's a lot of care that is necessary for smaller animals. Rashi points out, because their teeth are very dull, and therefore it's more difficult for them to chew food, they need their mother. What does it mean that their needs are more intense? Their teeth are blunt, therefore it's harder to eat. Now here's a very interesting halacha. Mikan ve'ilach, from this point forward. So now what we've just established is, so let's say after 30 days, or after 50 days, after 3 months, whatever it is, after a certain point in time, the shepherd could force his partner to go ahead and cash out on the smaller animals, right? So Moses, so now the interesting point over here is the following. Let's say the owner, we'll call him the owner of the cow, does not, or the owner of the animal, does not cash out after those days. What's the financial arrangement for the vlados, for the offspring? So the financial arrangement is like this. Each gets, again, half of the profits, half of the losses, but the person managing the vlados is entitled to half of the profits of his partner. So meaning, for example, we're saying the vlados are split 50-50, and the 50 of, we'll call him the silent partner. That's what I'm calling the non-shepherd partner. So the shepherd is entitled to 50% of the silent profit, on the silent partner's gains. And again, that's his management fee for going again and taking care of the vlados. So it says, Rav Nashia bar Gada shakal mechza shalav v'chatzi mechza shachaveiro. So what's Rav Nashia? So this happened. Rav Nashia was going ahead and managing these animals. He was a shepherd for these animals in this type of arrangement. The animal gave birth. He was managing the parents as well as the children. And therefore he took shakal mechza shalav. He took his half in the vlados. V'chatzi mechza shachaveiro. And half of his silent partner's portion in the vlados as well. They came before Abaye. Amar lei, man palag lecha, who allowed you to split this? Va'od makom shena gula gadalu. Furthermore, so first of all, who authorized you to split? Now what we're going to get into now is the interesting sugya of what happens if one of the parties, what's the word? Not one-sided, but... makes a unilateral division, right? Call it like that. One of the parties decides to go ahead and sell out, cash out, without informing the other party. What are the ramifications of that? So ultimately, again, Sabai says, A, who authorized you to sell? And number two, this is a place where the common custom was that if you are raising animals, you took care of the children as well. And we learned, Makom shenagu legadal yagdilu. We learned about, say, that's what? In a place where it's customary that the person shepherding, the shepherd who's raising the animals, there are places where it was customary to what? To also raise the offspring. So we'll say, again, as we're going to see, and as you've seen already, some many things in these type of transactions is also governed by minhag hamakom, by what's considered to be what we'll call like a local industry standard. So let's listen to this case. There were these two kusayim who went ahead and had a business arrangement with each other. They did the iska. So we'll say, so what happens? Simple case. So we'll call them kusi one gave to kusi two money. So right, go invest. And we agreed to share the profits and the losses equally. Fine. So what happened? Azul chad minayu, palig zuze belo daite dechave. So we'll say, so one of the parties, one of the kusim, decided to cash out. He split up once. I'm taking my half. I'm out. He took his half and he did not inform his friend. Azul kamei dera papa. So we'll say, so they came before Rav Papa. Now we'll say, now remember again. So in general, again, the kusim are an interesting group. Remember again, these were individuals who converted because again there was an outbreak of lions in Eretz Yisrael. Lions are not indigenous to Eretz Yisrael. They converted, but their conversion was always somewhat suspect because they were found to have lapsed back into idolatrous practices. So those kusam, also remember again, sometimes there are kusam that are mentioned in the Gemara are actually just people from Kusa. So whatever it is, the point over here is they're coming before Rav Papa for a psak halacha. So what happens? Asul kamei Rav Papa amrlei my nafka mine. What does this matter? Hachi amrav Nachman zuzi kiman depligi damu. We'll say this is actually very interesting. That when there's a partnership regarding money, when the partnership is about money, so either partner could essentially always cash out whenever they want. See, in other words, that both say, under normal circumstances, if we have an iska arrangement with a cow, before either party cashes out, what do we want? What do we want? You want an assessment. Right, because it would be nervous. I would be nervous if one of the parties made a unilateral withdrawal from the partnership without some type of independent or third party assessment of the animal. That really doesn't apply by money. Because by money, it is what it is. Right? Meaning you can count the money, you can see the money. There's no shaila about assessment of money. So Rav Papa suggests over here that when the iska arrangement is actually with money, either of the parties could essentially cash out of the partnership without informing the other beforehand. So the Gemara says, Lashana, so listen to this. So therefore, Rav Papa, so both say, just so you understand, two kusim over here. Two kusim, kusi aleph, kusi beis. They both have the arrangement. We'll call them kusi aleph withdraws unilaterally. And kusi beis comes, kusi number two comes along with the claim. Rav Papa essentially rules against kusi number two and says, kusi one acted appropriately. Okay, now watch this. Lashana, Zabun Chamra, Bahadi Hadadi. But right, what happened? The next year they both bought wine together. Kam idach paligle below daite de chavre. So what happens, they both say. Now in this case over here, what ended up happening is Kusi number two decided to go ahead and split the wine without informing Kusi number one. So remember again, Kusi number two was the aggrieved party in the first case, right? So he decided, look, Rav Papa ruled that you could split partnerships without informing the other. I'm splitting the one without informing my friend. Let's look at me, Rav Papa. So they came before Rav Papa. Amalei, man palag lecha. Rav Papa said, who allowed you, right? Who allowed you to split the wine? You can't split the wine without an assessment first. So let's... Yeah, or whatever it is, he sold it off. Whether he actually took half of the wine or he just liquidated the asset. Either way, he split up the partnership and divided up the proceeds. So Rav Papa says, Amalei, man paglacha, who said you could do this? Look at Rashi. Who assessed the wine? Right? Did you have a wine appraiser come in and assess the value of the wine before you sold it off? Because if you just did this on your own, who said it was a good valuation? So I will say, so I understand something, and this is an incredible yisod. Kusi number two has now what? He has been ruled against by Rav Papa in both cases. Right? So Amarle, kachazina debasar didi ka'asimar. I see that the master doesn't like me. I will say, but another incredible, incredible yisod. How again... Well, it's probably so on many different levels. How we have to be careful sometimes not to internalize certain things and recognize when people do certain things, it's not against me. But on the other hand, how careful we have to be with how people perceive our actions. Because how easy it is to slight someone thinking this. So this guy, this goosey thinks that Rav Papa has it in for him. So let's listen to this. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says, Amud Beis, Ki ay gavno, tzarech vaday lo odir. So let's listen to this. Rav Papa said, it appears to me in a case like this, it appears to me in a case like this, I have to explain my psak to this kusi. Now, both say there is a halacha that says the following. When a Beis Din renders a psak, a Beis Din is not obligated to disclose the reasoning for its psak. There is no obligation for transparency on that level. Beis Din does not, for many different reasons, but among them, because Beis Din often has to make a psak taking into account many different ideas. And I will say, this is different than today. Today, when a person goes to Beis Din, what they're really signing up for is for binding arbitration. So arbitration works a bit differently. And in arbitration, the arbiter is absolutely obligated to make the entire process much more transparent. But in a real Beis Din situation, we went to assignments. So Beis Din was never obligated, you know, they weren't obligated to write an opinion piece, right? A brief about why they decided what they decided. This is what the Beis Din decided. That's it. Rav Papa said, but however, this guy now thinks it's personal. This guy thinks it's personal. So because he thinks it's personal, I'm obligated to show him that this has nothing to do with him. I'm obligated to explain to him how I reached my decisions. So the Gemara says, Zuzi, because remember again, when it came to the case of money, mi shakel tavi v'shavik chaseri, amr leilo. So he said to him, listen, in the case of the money, right, in the first case, when you and your kusi partner had money, and you decided to, and he decided to split up the partnership interest. So, you got half of the pot, he got half of the pot. Tell me, did he take the good money and left you the bad money? He said, no, listen, money is money is money. Now the truth is, we know that's not totally true, right? There are different forms of money, but at least the Metzias in the case over here is, the money was all of the same type of coinage, or the same type of currency. So therefore, again, when he split the pot, there's no shaila in that. You got half, and he got half. Amri le chamra, kule alma yadi di'ikar debasim, di'ikar de lo basim. But we'll say at the end of the day, when it comes to wine, everyone knows there's good wine and there's not such good wine. And the truth is, therefore, before you sold off the barrel of wine, you really need to get assessed. Because first of all, again, you may or may not be a connoisseur. And even if you are a connoisseur, you may or may not be a connoisseur. Therefore, again, when it comes to money, and as long as all of the money is the same, the chalukah, the split is relatively straightforward. Not relatively, it is straightforward. And therefore, there's no need to bring in outside counsel. However, again, with wine, because wine is a commodity that some people know, some people don't know, you have to bring in an external opinion before you split it up. So Rav Papa explained to the kusi that he was not out to get him. So Gufa Amar Rav Nachman, Zuzi Kiman de Plegidamu. So also remember again, Rav Nachman said that when it comes to cases an iska of money, so or a partnership of money, one of the parties has the right to divide up the money whenever he wants. Why? Because money in general is like it's divided. So the Gemara says the following, Hani Mili, but that's only true when Tavi v'tavi, takuli v'takuli. We'll say that's only assuming that all of the money in question over here is of the same sug, is of the same type. So tavi v'tavi means either good money and good money, or Rashi points out over here, or takuli takuli means heavy money. Take a quick look at Rashi just a moment. Rashi is supposed to say, by the way, just so you understand how much more complex financial transactions were in the time of the Gemara. You know why? Because literally you had different forms of money. You had literally different forms of money. Anyway. So says Rashi. Just interesting. Says Rashi. I'm not getting real vibe over here. Okay, good. Says the Tavi Takili. Tough crowd. Says the Rashi. Yesh Zuzi Shemishkalam Kal. So there's some money where they're literally Mishkalam Kal means they're light. So that's the statement about their weight. They're light in weight. Vitsurasam Yotes Botsa. So we'll say there are two things that make up. I just find this very interesting. Because there are two things that allow essentially for the liquidity of money. What are the two things? Number one, it's precious metal content. Coinage literally was worth something because, and also number two was its tsura. It's imprint or the picture, the stamp on it, right? The actual imprint, the stamp on it. So you could have money that was light. Light means that its precious metal value is relatively little, but its tsura, its stamp, allows it to be easily used. So that's one type of money. Yorguluba, Vitovin Bautza, Yoser Mitsura Acheresh, Zuzishim Shkalan Yeser. So we'll say, here's what's amazing. You could have a coin that has less precious metal content, but has a good, quote unquote, good stamp, and that is better currency than a coin that has a higher concentration of precious metals, but doesn't have the same kinds of, which makes sense. I mean, we could even relate to this, that if a person has, you know, a lot of $100 bills, depending on where you're purchasing items from, that may not get you as far as a lot of $20 bills, right? Meaning, it's an incredible yisod. So what all the Gemara is saying over here is, when Rav Nachman said that if you have two, you're thinking about that one, all right, meaning go with the wad of $100 bills, but I'm just pointing out there are establishments. You don't go to these, I go to these kind of places. You don't go to these kind of places, right? But there are places that say we don't accept bills larger than a 50, right? So, something like that. So I'm just pointing out over here that sometimes having something that's worth more may not always be better. Meaning, when you're looking at kind of the net wealth picture, it might be better. But when you're looking on a commerce, on a business level, it may not be better. Why am I bringing this up? Because Rav Nachman made a statement that whenever two people are involved in an iska, and it's dealing with money, apparently one partner has the ability to pull out whenever they want. Again, I'll both say, this is in the event that they don't have a stipulated partnership agreement. Hopefully, partnership agreements, I'm assuming, normally spell out the terms of disengagement from the partnership, but assuming there is no contract, there is no partnership agreement, if it's dealing with money, one partner could cash out whenever he wants. All the Gemara is saying is, that's only if the partnership money is all the same money. So that when partner A liquidates his portion, partner B is left with the same portion. If, however, he says, and that's why he says, tabi, tabi, takule, takule, aval tabi, takule, we'll say, let's say again, let's say the partnership capital is literally made up. Some coins are, we'll call it lighter in precious metal, but better stamp. Some are heavier, but not as good stamp. So there's a mixture of coins, then low. Then I both say one partner cannot cash out of the partnership agreement, of the partnership, without the consent of the other, which makes sense. In other words, what it's saying is, when the partnership is made up of dissimilar assets, one of the partners cannot liquidate his share unilaterally. That has to be done with the consent of both partners, which makes sense, because then it becomes something that requires a shuma. It requires an assessment. So it says the Gemara, Rav Chama hava mugar zuzi b'pshita b'yomer. Let's listen to this. So Rav Chama thought that he found a way around a ribbis situation. What would he do? He wouldn't lend money. He would rent money. He would rent money. So you can imagine, both sides. I have a good business. I rent $100 bills, right? So the halot. But if you're going to rent my money, there's a rental fee. Just like if I rent a car, I have to pay. So we'll say what Rav Chama was suggesting was that money should be able to be looked at as a commodity. And both say, lest you say that's crazy. We learned that, right? Where did we learn this? Good. In the beginning of Perek Hazov, right? Excellent. Right? In the beginning of Perek Hazov, right? Remember we saw this. Hazov Kona Esakeh Seven. Meaning sometimes money could be looked at as an asset, especially if we'll say we're not dealing with dollar, we're not dealing with bills. We're dealing with currency that's made up of precious metals. So Rav Chama thought he had a great chap. I'm going to rent out my money. So I'm renting out a commodity. This commodity happens to be called money. So some people rent cows, and some people rent cars, and some people rent plows. I'm renting money. And so if you want to rent my money, here's the deal. You have to pay X amount of dollars per day. They're both saying, now in essence, he was charging ribbis without charging ribbis, right? Because ribbis is only on a halva, is only on a loan. Ribbis is not on a rental. So the Gemara says, Kalu Zuzi de Rav Chama. Rav Chama lost all of his money. Well, Rav Chama lost all of his money because it turns out that what he did was illegal. Right? Lemaisa, that's still called ribbis. That's still called ribbis. The fact that he framed it as a rental and not as a loan didn't change the metzias, that it was still considered, it was still, in essence, ahava. Money is also not generally considered to be a commodity, and therefore, unfortunately, kaluzuzi d'anachabose means the punishment, we'll discuss this, the punishment for lending money beribbis is you lose your money. In fact, generally, the klal gadol is the penalty for going and doing anything illegal or shady or unsavory, like kozeh chilul Hashem, in one's business. And generally, one does not end up ahead. So, but certainly with ribbis, there are specific things we'll learn that a person loses their money. Who suffer maishna mimara? So we'll say, remember, Rav Chama wasn't trying to skirt the law. I want to be clearer. Rav Chama was not trying to go ahead and chas v'shalom do something illegal. Rav Chama just had a flawed understanding. He thought, why should money be any different than a shovel? Mara is literally a shovel. Why should money be any different than a shovel? Velohi Mara had, but he was wrong. Why was he wrong? Mara hadra be'ina. The apostle. So we'll say, first of all, here's the difference. A shovel, right? If I rent a car, we'll say, right? If I rent a car, and I decide, you know what? When I go back to enterprise, I say, listen, guys, I'm giving you back this car instead, right? Just do me a favor, right? This is, I'm giving you a better deal, right? I'll sell it, right? This is the deal. And you are benefiting from this, right? So the lady behind the desk is going to look at me like I'm crazy because that's not how rentals work, right? What you take is what you have to return. So you can't call money a rental. Why, Rabosai? Because remember, again, the money that I'm returning is not the same money that I borrowed. Furthermore, via dia pachse. Furthermore, I will say any depreciation in the asset is clearly seen. Zuzi lo hajib is, but when it comes to money, lo hajib. And remember again, money is not returned in its exact state that it was borrowed. In other words, no one is ever obligated to return the same money that you borrowed, and you can't return the same money that you borrowed. The whole point of borrowing money is that you're using it for something. The assumption is a person, although we will see, there are cases where people only borrowed money for appearance purposes. Like if somebody wanted to do a gemara, we'll see this case, somebody wanted to do a business deal. So I'm trying to lure a potential investor. So what's the best way to, I don't know if it's the best way, but at least the gemara says, one of the ways that people used to lure investors is what? You put some cash on the table, right? You make it seem like Baruch Hashem, you know what you're doing. You've got an investment, money coming in. So those are cases sometimes where a person didn't even use the money. They just returned the money back at the end. We'll discuss those cases, but that's not the norm. So number one, you can't call this a rental because what you're renting is not what you're returning. Furthermore, again, depreciation is also immeasurable. Amar Rava. Surely the interesting the memory of the Chavir. Again, these are all interesting cases. We're going to finish up in just a few moments. But say this actually is a very, very, very important halacha. And by the way, it's riveting and exciting. So even if you have not been moved by anything I've said up until this point, get ready. So Amar Rava. Surely the initial memory of the Chavre. So a person is permitted to say to his friend, Heilach dalet zuze, v'osfei leplanya zuze. So we'll say, listen to this. A person is permitted to say to his friend, take this money and do me a favor, lend money to Reuven. So we'll say, what's happening over here? I want Reuven to lend money to Shimon. Reuven is not going to lend money to Shimon for whatever the reason. I want to give Reuven a gift in order to go ahead and entice him to lend money to Reuven. So So I say, Reuven, listen, here's the deal. Silber is going to give Reuven, I'm going to give you $500. And do me a favor, I'd like you in consideration of this gift to lend Shimon $5,000. So we'll say, so is this Ribbis? Well, it sounds a lot like Ribbis. Why? Because Reuven, at the end of the day, what is he going to walk away with? Let's say the duration of the loan is a year. After a year, what is he going to have in his pocket? $5,500. Which sounds, and he's profiting an extra $500 from lending Shimon $5,000. The Gemara says it's mutter. Why is it mutter? Very simple. The Gemara says, "Asra Torah Elo Ribis Haba Malve Lemalve." So, I'll say because ultimately, Milove Lemalve. Because I'll say the only interest that the Torah prohibited was interest that is arranged between a borrower and a lender. But for a third party to pay a lender in order to get him to lend money, that is absolutely legal. So, I'll say. So now this opens up a whole interesting discussion about paying people to essentially do things on your behalf. So the Gemara says, "V'amar Rava." So we'll say that's case number one. So I could go ahead and literally give a gift of cash to a potential lender to entice him to lend money to a particular borrower, and he would not have done it on his own. He's walking away with more. He is getting extra money above and beyond his principal to lend money. There's no shayla. The difference is because it's not coming from the borrower, it's going to be permitted.
Did the borrower say to his friend to give the money?
Good. We'll get to that. Vama Rava. So this case presupposes that the borrower is not involved in this transaction. So Alan's saying, good. What happens? We'll talk about that. So Vama Rava. I told you it was exciting. So we'll say, listen to this. A person could say to his friend, Shakil lecha arba zuzi, v'amar le leploni le'oz fun zuzi. So we'll say furthermore again. Now, this, Alan, this is your case. So a person could say to his friend, do me a favor, take this 4 zuz, and tell Ploni to lend me money. Right? So we'll say, so now again, this case comes a little bit closer to home. I want to borrow money. I want to borrow money from Reuven. So I say to what? I say, Shimon, do me a favor. You're friendly with Reuven. Do you hear? I'm going to pay you. Now in this case, we'll say, I'm paying Reuven to speak on my behalf to get Shimon to lend me money. Okay? So I'm paying Reuven. So we'll say, so again, from a borrower's perspective, this also sounds a little bit like Ribbis. Why? Now, we'll say, now this is a little bit of a strange case because here I want to get a loan of $5,000. Bless you. But the loan of $5,000 is actually going to cost me what? It's going to cost me $5,500, right? Because now I have to pay Reuven to speak to Shimon to get him to lend me the money. I apologize if I'm mixing up the names, but you understand the point. So the Gemara says, my time, well, what's the reason for this? Schar Amira Kashakil. The Bo said, this is called Schar Amira. It is common in business world to pay people to get things done. Brokerage, right? Essentially like a broker. But in this case, it's common to pay people if I need to secure money from someone. If I need to secure money from someone, it is a common practice, or at least, I don't know, is this legal today? I would assume it is, right? It sounds okay. It's in the Gemara. It's in the Gemara, right? Right? So I say, so listen to this. So it's legal for me to pay, which makes sense. It's legal for me, essentially, what am I paying for? I'm paying for someone to speak to a lender on my behalf. That's what's happening over here. So I'm paying Reuven to speak to Shimon on my behalf to get Shimon to lend me the money. So even though I, as the borrower, am going to end up paying above and beyond the actual loan amount. So let's say the loan amount is for $5,000. My investment as a lender in this loan is $5,500. I need to pay that $500 in order to get that $5,000. That's called Schar Amira. Ki ha da'aba mar b'rei d'ra papa, havel shakil ugna d'kira mikira. Both listen to this. It's actually interesting. Abamar, who was the son of Rav Papa, used to get wax, balls of wax from the wax merchants. Va'amrali la'avua osvinu zuzi. So we'll say, watch this case. Sa'aba, who was the son of Rav Papa, the wax merchants used to come to him and give him wax. Everybody needs a wax guy, right? So they gave him wax. And what would happen? Abba would then go to his father, Rav Papa, and say to Rav Papa, father, you should really lend the wax merchants money. Okay, so essentially, what was happening over here? So the wax merchants were lobbying the son to get his father to lend them money. So says the Gemara, so the rabbi said to Rav Papa, your son is eating ribbis. As your son ultimately, again, is essentially charging extra money. He's charging for access to you to get money. To get, or as well say, in this case over here, think about this for just a moment. Right here, what's happening is Rav Papa's son, Abba, is getting money from the potential borrowers in order to open the door for his father to lend them money. So the rabbi says to Rav Papa, this is ribbis. So the Gemara says, Amar Luhu, no, it's not. Kolkai Ribisa Nechol. This is totally permitted. Lo Asra Torah Ela Ribis Haba Milo V'Lamalver. Both say the cloud godel is the only type of ribis that is asr is going to be the type of interest that is charged from between a borrower and the lender. Hocha Schar Amira Kashakev Shara. Both say this is called Schar Amira. This is simply called the price of doing business. So charging money in order to go ahead and paying money in order to open doors, as long as that money is not paid directly between the borrower and the lender, is going to be absolutely permitted. Rabbi says, start the Mishnah. Shamin para v'chamer v'chol dover shu osev v'ochel mechza. So Rabbi says, the halacha is a para and a chamer. So Rabbi says, these are still iska cases. So you can have a para and a chamer, and these are examples of animals that work. That work, meaning they work, and therefore, to a very large degree, they pay for themselves. They pay for their own expenses. So the halacha is osev v'ochel mechza. So Rabbi says, the halacha is that they could split profits and losses equally. And in these cases, the owner of the animal, so to speak, does not have to give a management fee. Or I should say the silent partner does not have to give a management fee to the partner who's managing the animal. Rashi says over here, Shamin para, kidola v'chamar gadol sheru'uyin l'malacha, umalachtam kula shamakabal. So we'll say, remember again, let me say it differently. So in these cases where the animal works, so the partner who is managing the animal, by definition, gets the benefit of the work of the animal. So essentially, what the Mishnah is saying is like this. If you have a partnership, an Iska partnership, at 50-50, right? Schar and Hefsid. So under normal circumstances, in order to avoid ribis, so the silent partner has to give, we'll call him the managing partner, a partnership fee In this case over here, where the animal works, that work of the animal is considered the managing fee. And therefore, again, there's no need for any additional fee. Makom shnagu lachlokes havlados mead cholkin. We will say a place where if the animal that the shepherd is watching, the managing partner is watching, they would normally go ahead and, liquidate the offspring. Oh, it doesn't sound right, but you understand what I mean. Right? Meaning the cash out of the offspring, so you could cash out immediately. In a place where it was common for the managing partner to raise the offspring, you raise us. In other words, minagamakum. Whatever you do with offspring is decided by minagamakum. So what happens? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, shaman egel im imo, v'siach im imo. So we go ahead and we evaluate the calf together with its mother, and siach is a colt together with its mother. Rashi says over here, shaman egel im imo, v'intarachli fein schar amal umazon egel elu le'ein. So ultimately, again, we will see that Rabbi will say these are cases, the egel and the siach are animals where the young is primarily cared for by the mother. There's not really any additional effort that is necessary by the shepherd. And last, umafriz al sadehu v'emechoshesh mishum ribis. Now, we don't know what exactly mafriz literally means, to increase. You can increase the field, and you don't have to worry about ribis. Rabbi, let's just begin the Gemara. We're going to do a little bit, and then I'm going to let you go. So it says the Gemara. Tan Rabbanan. Rabbi, here we go. Listen to this beautiful case. Mafriz asleve in a choshesh. Rabbi, the Gemara begins by focusing on the end of the Mishnah. So the end of the Mishnah says, mafriz asleve in a choshesh mishum ribis. What does this mean? Ketzad. What is the case? So listen to this. It's actually really interesting. Listen to this. I rent my field to my friend. I have a field. I rent it to Ruvain. The deal is, the rental payment is Asara Kurin Chitin Lashana. He's going to pay me 10 kor of wheat a year. That's the rental. So listen to this. Then Ruvain says to me, do me a favor, lend me 2,000 zuz va'afarna sena. Rashi says over here, means kol tzarcha. I'm going to invest. I'm essentially going to take this. I'm going to improve the field. And I'll give you, instead of 10 kor a year, I'll give you 12 kor a year. So we'll say. So now, what's happening over here? Right. The original arrangement was 10 kor a year. Now he's asking to borrow 2,000 zuz, and he says what? Now, obviously, if he borrows 2,000 zuz, what does he have to do? He's obviously going to give him back 2,000 zuz. In addition to giving you 2,000 zuz, you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to increase the rental payment to 12 kor a year. Now, both sides. This sounds like ribis. So the Gemara says, mutter, it is permitted. Now, we'll discuss why. Look at Rashi. Mutter, ve'ein zu ribis scharmos. This is not called ribis. What is this called? Elo shechokha rimenu sadam mishubachas. Both sides, listen to this. How do we view the 2,000? Meaning, we know, see, here's the chap in this case. Why is Ruvain borrowing the money? He wants to improve the field. So we'll say, when he uses that money to improve the field, then what? Then what's happening over here, the terms of the agreement change. When we made the agreement of this field for 10 kor a year, that wasn't a special type of field. Now that you're improving the field, so the rental agreement changes as well. So this is not called ribis. This is called the renegotiation of the rental agreement, because the field has now been improved. Incredible. However, aval ein mafriz lo al achanas v'lo asfina. Bosa, listen to this. But this arrangement would not work. Bosa, let's say I went ahead and I have a store, and I rented Ruvain my store. He has the right to run the store. And the rent is $10,000 a year. And he asked to borrow $2,000, and he says, okay, give me the $2,000, and I'll increase my rent to $12,000 a year. That does not work. That does not work. Same idea, if he rented a boat for me, and then he asks to borrow money, and let's say the rental of the boat was, whatever, $10,000 a year, and then he goes ahead and increases the rental, I'm sorry, then he asks for a loan of $2,000, and we increase the rental boat to $12,000, that doesn't work either. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because the only time that you could still, this only works in the case of a field, where literally, again, if he invests the money in the field, you can understand why there'll be greater output of the field. But by a store or by a boat, this wouldn't apply. We're going to challenge that in just a moment. Look at Rashi for just a moment. If Ruvain borrowed from you, or he rented from me, a boat or a store, you can't go ahead and use that. You can't go ahead I'm sorry. You can't go ahead and borrow money to purchase fruit or velim kar lochanos or prak matcha. So kaven de la begufa deschanos usvina kamafik. So we'll say this arrangement only works when the money that's being borrowed is being invested directly in the item that was rented. Then I could renegotiate a higher rental agreement because the item itself is being improved. But in a store or in a boat, where the idea over here is the money being borrowed is just used to purchase more merchandise for the store or to go and to sell on the boat, the item itself is not being improved, and therefore what? You cannot justify a rate hike in the rental agreement without calling it ribis. However, listen to this. However, Amar Rabba Baravuha, Pan Moshe Mafriz Alchonos. There are times, Rabbi Osai, where what? Where if I'm renting a store to Reuven, and let's say the rent is $10,000. Reuven wants to borrow $2,000, and we want to agree on a rent hike for the store. There are situations where that's justifiable when? Latzer Batsura. Rabbi Osai, Latzer Batsura literally means he's going to paint murals on the wall of the store. In other words, Rabbi Osai, what does this mean? If Reuven says, I'm going to take the money, and I'm going to improve the real estate. In other words, I'm going to improve the store. I'm going to paint it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Oh, then in Achinami, then we can justify a rate hike in the rental because you are improving the actual asset. But see, you see the klal over here. Same idea. Svina lasas ba iskara. I'm sorry. Let's say what? Svina lasas ba iskara. So we'll say, so ultimately, and similarly, what? If let's say, again, I rented him the boat and he's borrowing the money to put on a new mast on the boat. And I was about to say, you see what's the klal gadol over here? If the money is being borrowed to improve the asset that was rented, then a rent increase is justifiable because the asset itself is going up in value. So the Gemara explains this. Chanos lotzer batzorsa, ditzavu ba'inshi ba've egretfei. Because I will say, once, if the person who's renting the store pretties up the store, makes it nicer, then I, the owner of the store down the road, will be able to charge greater rent. Svina lasos la iskara. I will say, similarly again, if he puts a new mast on the boat, Kevan de Shapira iskere tfe agra tfe. But at the end of the day, a boat with a new mast is worth more money, and therefore, again, we could justify the rate increase. So we'll stop over here for today. But bottom line, again, you see the klal gadol is that a rent increase is justifiable, even if it comes on the heels of a loan, as long as what? That loan is being used to actually improve the item that was rented, then the increased rental is not called ribis, but rather the increased rental is reflective of the newly appreciated value of the item being rented. All right, so we'll stop over here.
Rabbi Deborah just texted me and said she sent you an email and has some urgency. She wants you.